Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Got him on the field. He's got Drew. 35, 30.
Caught him. Gets up. Caught. Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Alongside Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. You can also use hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. And before we get to your phone calls, before we get into the heat of discussion with respect to New York Giants, we have a special guest joining us right off the top. He is a former Giants kicker, helped them win two Super Bowls, and it is Raul Alegre. Raul, welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live. Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino here with you. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Everything is great. Thanks for the opportunity.
Raul's, of course, with ESPN Deportes, so he is very, very much on top of exactly what's happening with the league. And, of course, the new rule changes yesterday. The reason for the phone call, Raul, because, my goodness, as an accomplished place kicker and a very clutch place kicker for the Giants over the years, I can only imagine what you would be thinking if you were kicking in this league right now, given the extra points are now being moved back to the 15-yard line. What are some of your thoughts as to why they did this? Do you agree with it? Do you think they could have made some different changes, like narrowing the goalposts instead? What is your initial gut reaction?
Well, I don't think, all things being equal, and let me preface that because all things are not equal, but all things being equal, I don't think there would have been much of a difference. Professional kickers can make 32-yard kicks easily, you know, in their sleep. I mean, that's a cliche, but really, they're very accurate. But when I say that things are not equal, is that I remember the old Meadowlands back in December, January, when the wind was blowing real, real hard. It was a challenge to make a 32-yard field going into the wind. I don't know what the new Meadowlands is like, but I know back then it used to be difficult. And I know that teams that play in the northern climates may have a disadvantage compared to teams that play in domes or teams that play in the south where the weather is not that much of a factor. So you know, you come to the end of the year when the teams are fighting for a playoff spot, and it may come down to a missed extra point because it is snowing real hard or the blowing is blowing the wind is blowing real hard. Then you go to Miami, and where the weather is perfect, and a 32-yard field goal is nothing. So things are not equal, and that's what really, really bothers me. With the extra point at the way it was before, it wasn't that much of a difference. You can kick through the wind in that and not really alter the competitive aspect of the game. I would have liked, if they wanted to put excitement in, back in the extra point, to move the ball to the 1 yard line and encourage teams to go more for 2 points.
Okay.
And the fact that they can't return a missed extra point or a fumble or on a 2 point or conversion, I really like that part. But the competitive side of this, I think, is going to come into play. But again, you know, the all things being equal, 32-yard, 20-yard with kickers nowadays doesn't make that much difference, but weather probably will be a fact.
Well, let me ask you this, Raul. The uprights are what, 18-6 wide, right?
Correct.
Okay, and now for the Pro Bowl this past year, they experimented with the 14 feet wide, and, of course, they also moved the extra points back. And Adam Vinatieri, one of the great kickers of our time, he missed a couple of extra points, as well as, I think, a 38-yard, very makeable field goal. Did they maybe miss the boat here in terms of, if you don't think that the distance on the extra points is that big a deal, should they, if they wanted to add more excitement to it, maybe just narrow the uprights and said keep it where it is and just narrow the goalpost to 14 like they did in the Pro Bowl, and this way field goals and extra points might be a bit more difficult, or am I reaching here?
And is that really what you want? I mean, do you want to see more missed field goals and extra points? How is that adding to excitement? How is that? I mean, that will definitely would have an impact on the strategy of the game. But is that what you really want? I really don't agree with trying to penalize kickers for doing their job well. And
right.
On the other hand, making it easier for quarterbacks to complete passes, you know, why don't you go back to letting the receivers, the defensive back bump the receivers, you know, plot the routes? I mean, if you want to make it competitive, give the defense a chance. So I really don't think that narrowing the goalpost is a good idea. I think that right now I'm more of a traditionalist, although the goalposts have been moved back. You know, they used to be on the goal line. Now they were moved back, and I believe they were narrowed sometime in the 70s. I'm not quite sure of the year. But you're continuing to penalize guys for doing their job well, and I just cannot agree with that.
Talking with former Giants kicker Rule Allegre here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Rule, you mentioned that you would have thought if they moved the two-point conversion to the one-yard line, perhaps that would give teams more ammunition to go for two, even though it's staying at the two-yard line. The fact that they're moving the field goals back to about 33 yards,
PATs.
The extra points, excuse
PATs.
Me, how do you think that's going to change the thought process for teams? Do you think they'll go now maybe for two-point conversions a little bit more often, considering the extra point is further away?
I do not, unless the factor that I mentioned earlier, it comes into play. If the wind is really blowing hard, where it's, you're going to, as a kicker, you're going to tell your coach, you know, going in this direction, a 32-yard field goal is a challenge. So maybe it'll encourage the team to go for two. But I don't think it's going to have that much of an effect in places where the weather is stable or they're playing indoors. I don't think it'll make any bit of difference to what the history showed us, the statistics showed us the last few years.
Raul, how do you think the mindset of a kicker will change? Because a lot of people assume that the extra point is pretty much automatic. Now the fact that to get that additional point, you have to be challenged to a significant degree, as you just alluded to, especially if you're in a cold weather situation. How does the kicker's mindset now change entering a season like this?
Well, most guys are pretty confident that they can make a 32-yard field goal. I mean, I believe the percentage inside 40 yards is north of 85%. I don't have that statistic with me, but I think it's pretty,
yeah,
pretty high. And I just don't think that'll be that much of a difference. But again, it will penalize teams that play in harsh weather conditions. And I don't think that's a fair level, an even playing field for everybody. I mean, it may have an impact come January, December, and with teams that are in a vying to get into the playoffs. And if you happen to have your deciding game in a good weather environment, and the team that you're going against is playing in a difficult weather environment, that may be the difference between you making or not making the playoffs.
Raul, I know you got to run. One final question for me. The reason that the league said they did this is because it was becoming too mundane, too automatic, too run-of-the-mill. They wanted to try to challenge the extra point situation more than it was. But with the increase in the specialists, the kickers in particular, you know as well as I do, there are schools for this now. There are guys who are training to become kickers all the way from high school and up. I don't even think, at least I remember when you were playing here with the Giants, I don't remember it being such a technological type of science. I mean, you guys, yourself included, you were a specialist, and you were a soccer player, and you were outstanding at what you did. But it looks like that the new generation of kickers are taking this whole thing to like another science, another level, to where they're like robo-kickers. Does that make any sense to you? And do you understand why the league maybe wanted to make it more difficult?
Yeah, I understand why the league did it. It was becoming routine, and kickers were hardly ever missing. But for me, it just moved the ball to the one-yard line and encouraged the teams to go for two. Trust me, and I go back to my point again, kicking in ideal weather conditions, 32 and 20 yards are not going to be that much of a difference.
Okay.
With regards to your point to kickers being more of a technician, you know, there are quite a few things that have changed over the last 20 years. To me, back then, in the 80s, in the 70s, 80s, and beginning of the 90s, not too many teams had long snappers. I mean, the teams that actually started, and I think Bill Parcells was one of the first ones to have somebody dedicated just to, you know, to snap the balls. And to me, that gives the whole operation a high degree of consistency. When you have the starting center doing the snaps, I mean, the guy just finished, you know, I don't know, 8-9 play drive. He was all beat up and sweaty with tape on his hands. So the snaps would not always come back there where you needed them to be, and it affected the timing, and it affected the rhythm. But now that you have long snappers, everything is pretty automatic, and those guys can go out on their own and practice. I mean, back then, it was difficult to get your, you know, center to come out and give you some extra snaps after practice because he was exhausted. Back then, they didn't have the rule where you could only have pads once a week or even less than that. Back then, it was almost every day.
Right.
So now you have don't forget about the long snapper. To me, that's the biggest change, the thing that is help the kickers the most. Also, the consistent surfaces and the stadiums now where the wind just doesn't play as much of a factor, all those come into play. I think that there were some guys back in the 80s that were just as good or better than anybody that is playing today, but the overall conditions were different. But you're right, you know, kickers nowadays, the one thing that I've noticed is that they're bigger. And as far as kickoffs, that's where I see the biggest difference because guys have really perfected the kickoff, their kickoff techniques, and they're bigger, they're stronger, and they can get more momentum into their kicks. And that has also improved the overall kicking, not just the field goals and extra points, but kicking in general.
Raul, before we let you go, one other thing that has changed since you played is the introduction of the K-ball, in which the NFL now provides special teams balls. When you played, you know, kickers had a little bit more flexibility. How much of an influence do you think that had, perhaps, in the changing of percentages in terms of kickers making field goals and making extra points?
Well, it really didn't affect very much. I mean, the kickers were blamed for the balls being all scuffed up, and now you know that is the quarterbacks that are behind everything. I mean, so they introduced the K-balls blaming the kickers, but it's always been the quarterbacks behind the whole ruse of you know, getting the balls conditioned to play. And I don't think it had that much of an effect. And the one thing is to just get used to it. I mean, until I came to the Giants and Phil Simms was very finicky about the way he wanted the balls, I always kicked with brand new balls, which are equivalent to K-balls, and it didn't bother me at all. And I don't think it's bothered the kickers since, I believe it was 1999 when he introduced the K-ball.
Correct. Exactly.
I don't think that's affected their efficiency any. So.
Good stuff, Raul. It is always great to talk to you. I so much appreciate your time. I know you've been very, very busy today, and I hope to see you up here. You going to come up at all to visit?
I don't have anything planned. The last time I was there was when I was the captain, the honorary captain for the Texans game.
Right.
And I don't think I'll be able to make, with my ESPN work schedule, having to do Monday Night Football, it's hard for me to make it there on Sundays when they have the Alumni Day, which I really miss. But while I'm still broadcasting Monday Night Football, it's going to be difficult.
Well, Raul, you've always been a class act, a fine gentleman, and I know Giants fans everywhere appreciate what you've meant to this franchise because, boy, 1986, that was a special, special year. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Raul. Appreciate it.
You're most welcome.
Raul Allegre joining us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. I threw him that fastball. He hit it right out of the park, Paul.
The quarterbacks. The ruse.
That was a great line. K-balls had nothing to do with the kickers. All about the quarterbacks, given the current climate.
You know, the thing that I really was interested in what he said, and it didn't really occur to me until he said it, and that was that the new rule will impact the teams with the bad weather climates more than it will the teams in the domes or in good weather climates. He basically was saying it's unfair, you know, and when you think about it, he's right. I didn't pay much mind to that when I was thinking, and maybe I should have. You know, obviously weather conditions affect the kicking game. Maybe that should have come more to the forefront of the conversation. But that clearly is what rubs him the wrong way.
Well, it's a balanced playing field right now because the extra point is so close, Paul. If you're in 50-degree weather, if you're in 85-degree weather, if it's 30 degrees, the percentages are still in your favor despite the environment. Now, what Raul is bringing up, and it's a fair point, the kicker that's in 30-degree weather with very windy conditions now has to attempt essentially a 33-yard field goal to get an extra point, whereas the kicker in 85 degrees also has to get the 33-yard field goal but doesn't necessarily have to deal with the cold weather and the wind. So it's no longer a balanced playing field.
No, and, you know, you could say, well, it is for the people who are playing in that game on that day. Well, that's fine, but what if you're the Buffalo Bills? And, you know, you have a bunch of home games in December, or you're the Patriots, or you're the Giants, or the Cincinnati Bengals, or the Eagles, or the Browns. And if you're playing a bunch of home games, well, guess what? You're playing in different weather than the Miami Dolphins and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the New Orleans Saints and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So he is right in that regard. Your hometown kicker in inclement weather environments is going to be having to kick more of his extra points under adverse conditions than other kickers around the league who have better environments. And that is a built-in handicap against home teams who are going to have to deal with that.
Or can you look at it on the flip side? Let's use the Giants. Josh Brown, who has experience at MetLife Stadium, has experience in Seattle with some unlikable conditions. Since he's sort of built into that and he has a mechanism to deal with it, will it not bother him? Whereas, let's say the Dolphins kicker, who is going to be playing all his home games in favorable conditions, now has to go on the road, and when you thought the extra points were not going to be a problem when you go to Buffalo, now it's all of a sudden a little bit more of a challenge.
Well, maybe home field in the playoffs for those inclement weather teams is now even more pronounced.
That could certainly enter the conversation when we get to that point, especially down the stretch. We got the playoffs. What about week 16, week 17, when you're jockeying for position for that final playoff spot and you're the Dolphins and the Bills, for example, Miami's at home, Buffalo is on the road or something like that. It could change things because now it all of a sudden influences strategy more, Paul, I would say.
Well, think about this.
Would you have the inkling to go for two given the conditions now?
Let me give you folks some numbers before we get to the phone calls. So, Greg, do we got guys on the hold already?
We got some guys.
All right. We'll get to you guys in just 1 minute, but I want to give you a couple of numbers that facts about this point after attempt deal, which may or may not spark some more conversation or debate or make you feel one way or the other. Last year during the preseason, first 2 weeks of the preseason, remember they experimented by moving the extra points back to the 15. Kickers hit on 133 out of 141 attempts for 94% during the experiment. During the season, when everything was status quo, it was 99.3%. So clearly, there was a small drop-off. Okay, is that enough to warrant this change? You guys have to be the judge on that. But here are the facts. I'm giving you facts here. This is not opinion. We mentioned during the Pro Bowl, the uprights were 18-6 wide, reduced to 14, plus they moved the ball back. Vinatieri missed two extra points and missed a 38-yard field goal. And he is one of the most accurate kickers in the history of this game, and he had an impossible situation to deal with. He just couldn't do it. Okay, now, here's what we do know, is that from the 33-yard line, the average percentage of makes, and again, it's kind of funny how it jives with the preseason number, 93%. So that seems to be a legit number. That's not just a sampling or some fluke. That seems to be a legit number. I don't know, folks. Raul didn't seem to like the suggestion of narrowing the uprights. He seemed to take offense to the fact that you're penalizing kickers for being so good, and he doesn't want to see people getting penalized for that. That's the way he sounded like he interpreted it, that was why are you taking away these guys' skills and making it so much more difficult for them. I've always been of the opinion that that would be the better way to go rather than moving the ball back. Because if Raul's right, and again, the numbers indicate about a 6% or so differential in moving the PAT back. Is that enough to warrant the change? Or how would the number change if they just kept the ball at the two and just narrowed the uprights? Would that change it 5%, 4%, 0%? I have no idea. I guess what I'm saying is I'd rather they tried that as an experiment this preseason, like what they did last year when they moved them back. I would rather have had them try the narrowing of the goalpost this year as an experiment and said, okay, we saw 2014, we saw 2015 in the preseason. We'll think about now what we want to do for 2016. I personally think this is a little rushed. I don't think they've gone through the entire process and thought about all the different angles on it. I think they just wanted to change it for the sake of making a change. And I just don't think every stone's been unturned in trying to discover all the angles that they could have explored.
Well, I think you have to ask yourself, Paul, was it broken? Was anything broken in the process?
Well, they say it was broken because it was too automatic. They're saying that was broken.
I mean, I don't necessarily look at it like just because something's automatic doesn't mean that it's broken. There's quarterbacks in this league that have high completion percentage. Should we now throw more obstacles their way so that they don't complete passes?
Well, Will's right. We've done everything we can to help the passing game and the offense. And quite frankly, the kicking game has been helped with, although he said the K-balls weren't an impact, but the artificial surfaces he admitted was, you know, and the domes and...
Well, a few questions we'll throw out to the audience. Obviously, we want to hear where you stand on this change. And just to reset, the extra points are now going to go back to the 15-yard line. So it's essentially going to be a 32, 33-yard field goal, in essence, to make an extra point. Where do you stand on that? In terms of the goalposts, considering Vinatieri had a real rough time, now that doesn't mean that every kicker is, my feeling is I'd rather them move it back than monkey with the goalposts.
You would.
Because you mentioned, you said that keep the extra points where they are, but narrow the goalposts. But then what happens on field goals? You're going to keep the goalposts where they are, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah, because
you can't change them out during the game.
I think that the field goals have become too easy.
I don't know about that, Paul.
Here's the deal.
I think with weather,
here's the deal.
A challenge.
Here's the deal. Here's what I want to give you. I want to give you a number, okay?
You've been doing a lot of mathematical equations.
I've been looking at a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
Look, folks, you remember I'm old school, right? And I remember back in the early 70s, late 60s, early 70s, the Jim Botkins of the world, the Pete Gogolaks of the world. Jim Turner was the kicker for the Jets. You remember Fred Cox of the Minnesota Vikings. Horace Molman from the Bengals. Earl Mann from the Detroit Lions. All of these guys, okay? Kurt Knight was with the Washington Redskins. In those days, Jan Stenerud, Yepremian, all these guys, Blanda was kicking for the Raiders in those days. In those days, if you had a field goal kicker who could connect on upwards of 65% of his field goals, he was considered really, really good. Okay? Well, then, what happened? There became more emphasis on the field goal kicking game. Guys started training for it. Guys started getting stronger legs for it. Let me give you a number, okay? Please let me give you a number, Lance, because I want to make sure I got this 100% correct before I throw it out there, because I have an approximation, but I don't have, what is it? Here we go. It's not on this particular
ESPN.
We can
come back to it later.
The point was, I believe last year, I believe the average field goal percentage was something like 85% in the league.
Across the board,
and that's regardless of distance, across the board. It's become almost like anything inside 40 is automatic. It's almost like an extra point. So if the really, really good kickers back in the day were 65%, and now, hey, when Raul Allegri kicked for the Giants, I remember Bill Parcells sitting in the press room telling us about, of course, his disdain for kickers. He had a real thing for kickers, saying that if my kicker can't connect on 75% of his field goals, I don't want him here. I need 75% out of my guy. And that's back now in the mid-80s. All right, Parcells started as a rookie head coach in 83, which was my first year. Parcells said, I need 75%. Now, that's an increase of even from 10 to 12 years earlier when it was 65 to 70, if you were like really, really unbelievable. I mean, that was like reaching the ceiling. You kick 75% on field goals now, you're out of league.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't stand a
You're
chance.
Done. Yeah. Goodbye. Here's the door. Try finding another job somewhere. That's how scientific and how good these guys have become. So I'll be honest with you. I know Raul's a kicker, and I love the guy. Great guy. I have tremendous respect for him. But I have no problem shrinking the uprights and making the PATs and the field goals harder, because I quite frankly think that they've become too good across the board.
Well, but should we be punishing, as Raul mentioned, somebody for honing their craft and getting good at it? And that's why I use the quarterback parallel. You know, as quarterbacks increase their passing yards and their completion percentage, does that mean now that we have to throw more obstacles in their way? I mean, I think the game is fine as it is. I think we're just at the point where we're just trying to add little issues to perhaps spice things up. When you look at big picture perspective, I don't think that the game is at a point where there are major issues that we need to hear fine-tune things here or there. But let's hear from you. I know a number of people have been holding on the lines. Let's get your perspective. 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get to your tweets as well as we take you up to the top of the hour. Nick is in New York, and Nick gets us going here on a Wednesday. Nick, what's happening?
Not much. I'm tending to agree with Raul. I think that, you know, you're punishing kickers for being good. I think you should reward kickers who are good. I think that if you want to encourage the teams going for the two-point conversion, move the ball closer, encourage them, but don't punish the kickers. I think it should go the other way. I think you should reward kickers. Like, for instance, if a field goal is 57 yards or more, why not make it 4 points instead of three?
Yeah, well, I mean, that to me is more of like a fantasy type of an element, and that's popular in fantasy leagues. I don't think they need to necessarily tweak the points, but, you know, piggybacking off of your point, I think that what you're saying is they should be emphasizing the value of kickers, and maybe exactly. To a certain degree, Nick, this actually sells you on the kicker a little bit more, because now if the extra point is not automatic – and you've got to actually knock down a 32, 33-yard field goal, I would say that puts more substance and stock behind kickers. And knowing that you want a kicker on your team that is going to be able to be put in precarious positions throughout the season, even for extra points, and is going to be able to deliver for you. So I think this actually helps value the kicker more than perhaps under the old rules.
Well, you know, perhaps. I just don't really like – I believe in the reward system, not in the punishment system. I think if the league is trying to go to make it, okay, it's too automatic, you want to encourage teams to go for the two-point conversion more, add a little more excitement, a little more strategy into the game, then put the ball closer to the goal line and encourage them that way. But don't – to me, it seems to be a little backwards thinking. It's like you want to encourage the teams to go for 2 points, put it closer, but don't put the onus on the kickers. I mean, why should you punish kickers for being good? And as I said, it kind of skews things for teams, good weather teams versus bad weather teams. As you pointed out, if the field goal kicker for Miami comes up into MetLife Stadium in late December, you know, it's a disadvantage for the Dolphins.
Because they haven't been in that environment as much, perhaps, as the Giants kicker.
Exactly. It's. I mean, to me, I don't know. It doesn't seem to be that well thought out. I think what Paul said is correct. They didn't think it out well enough. I think more study should have gone into it, experiment with it more, rather than doing this, you know, going in head first into the water. And I think you're going to find the unintended consequences in the upcoming season.
All right, Nick. Well, listen, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. I would agree with the caller, and you even brought this up as well as Raul. They could have moved the extra point back, Paul, at the same time move the two-point conversion up a yard, and then see if now you're enticing teams to go for two more often.
Bottom line is they could have done more experimentation during this preseason as they began doing last preseason, and instead they decided to jump into the pool right away. To me, that's probably the biggest problem I have with this entire scenario. We could talk about however you want to tweak it, and we can all have different opinions about that. But I think we can all agree they should have done more experimentation. By the way, just one number I want to give you. Of the qualifying place kickers in last year's NFL, 30 of them, of the 31 who qualified, made over 75% of their field goals last season. Blair Walsh of Minnesota was 26 of 35, 74.3, the only one of the 31 qualifiers who was under 75%.
Now, you don't have the breakdown in terms of attempts in the 30s, the 40s, and the 50s. Do you just
well,
have curiosity?
It does not have the full league-wide breakdown. It has each individual breakdown here. But, you know, what's happening here is that, and I've talked about this with Jeff Fiegels, you know, the Giants should be Hall of Fame punter, who has said to me that the schooling and the amount of science and the amount of training that has gone into kicking over the course of the last couple of decades is far beyond what anybody could have imagined. I mean, it's like the left-handed relief pitcher or the left-handed catcher in baseball. It is now such a specialty where these robo-kickers are literally being developed. I mean, the guy's like Janikowski. The guy can kick the ball like 80 yards if he really wants to. And it's like they're just so good. These robo-kickers are so good now at what they're doing. I know Raul is going to get mad at me, but I don't have a problem making their job more difficult. I really don't.
Well, you're coming from the school of thought, Paul, that as the evolution of the game continues and as kickers improve their skill sets, you should then evolve the rules to continue to make it just as challenging as it was back in the day. Did I misinterpret that?
Or? No, yeah. You're absolutely right. The only thing that's changed in terms of kicking in the last several decades, and Raul did mention it, the goalposts or the actual stanchion used to be on the goal line. I know you young fellas don't understand that or remember that, but go back and watch on the old 8mm films. You'll know the stanchion was on the goal line. And teams used to use that to help pick and screen defensive backs.
Part
you know?
Strategy.
Frankly, I thought it was crazy because you've got people running into the damn thing all the time. It's dangerous. So I'm glad they moved it back to the end line. But I remember it was a big hullabaloo when that happened. You're too young. You don't remember that, do you?
Well, I've seen video, though.
But
so
the headlines, when they moved back those goalposts, when they took that stanchion and put it to the back end, wow, was that a story. I mean, you're going to add an extra 10 yards to the field goal. Wow. And the extra point. And then the other big story I remember was that they were going to take a missed field goal. And it used to be the ball would come back to the line of scrimmage. Now, you remember this. And then they said, oh, no, no. Now it's going to come back to the point of the actual placement of the kicker, which is an additional 7 yards or so. Because they were getting really ticked off that too many people were trying, in those days, a long 45-yard field goal. I mean, look, folks, you know as well as I do, you're fans out there, you watch the games, you remember the days when if a guy kicked 45 yards and drilled that three-pointer, you were like, hey, that's a good kick, man. He did a good job. Now, if he misses the 45-yarder, you want to hang him because that's how good kickers have gotten. Now it's like 52, he should try it. He should definitely try that 52-yarder. He's got a chance. He should try that. And if he misses it, you're bummed. You know, in my day, holy smokes, he's gonna try 45 yard. He's gonna try a 50 yard field goal.
Waters. Yeah.
Wow. That's how the game's changed, man.
But there's nothing wrong with that, though. And notice how we don't necessarily have to change the rules. It's the evolution of the strength of the kicker. So that's a positive.
Have they outgrown the rules, though? That's the question. Have they outgrown the rules of the game?
Unless it's 99.9% or 100%, I don't see how they've outgrown the rules. Extra points, I get the fact that you want to experiment, Paul, but I'm going back to your point about field goals. Unless it's 99.9%, I don't see how they've outgrown the rules.
See,
because it's not automatic.
The league decided that it was just too ridiculous. Too many guys are trying 45 and 50-yard field goals. And so we're going to punish them when they miss, okay? And we're going to take that ball and we're going to put it at the spot instead of the line of scrimmage. We're going to penalize them that extra 7 yards because we're going to try to cut down on guys just trying these ridiculous Hail Mary field goals from, 45 and 50 and 53 yards. But now the kickers are so good, teams are going through it every routine anyway.
But
they don't care.
Risk, though. But the risk still exists, though. And we do have times where a kicker does miss a 55-yard field goal, and then that gives great field position to the opposition.
I mean, look at some of these numbers. 50-plus. Dan Bailey from Dallas, 5 of 7. Randy Bullock from Houston, 4 of 5. Patrick Murray from Tampa Bay, 5 of 6. Phil Dawson from San Francisco, 6 of 9. Greg Zuerlein, St. Louis, 5 of 7.
But there's two or three misses there for each kicker. Once again, it's not automatic.
I didn't say it was automatic, but this is a regular happenstance now.
But once again, to me, that's the evolution of the game, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, the best parallel, Paul, to your argument would be in baseball. If too many guys are hitting home runs, they should move the fences back in every park.
Well, you know what they used to do years ago? They changed the pitcher's mound. Offense was too much. They said, we got to help out the pitchers. Or at one point, the pitchers were too good. If you remember, in the late 60s, the pitchers were dominant. The Ron Marichals, the Bob Gibsons. The pitchers were destroying hitters. ERAs were so low, batting averages were so low, they said, well, we got to do something about this. We're going to lower the pitcher's mound because we're going to give hitters a better chance. Leagues tweak with the rules all the time, usually to try to enhance scoring. They never help the defense, ever. Ever. Nobody ever wants to lower stuff. They always want to make more. That's what we do in the United States and in Canada. Everybody in North America wants more. We're gluttons for everything, including scoring.
Well, Paul and I are getting into this discussion. We want to hear what you have to say. Let's head back to the phone lines at 201-939-4513. Lance Meadow, Paul DeTito with you here on Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Mike is in Oakland. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Good morning. I'm hoping you're going to give me a little time because I want to hit the kicker thing, and I'd also like to go to the most important player discussion yesterday. But start off with the kicker thing. You know, I'm an ex-soccer player, so I like the kicking game. But I got to agree with Paul, and I got to throw a little spin on it. You know, I agree with Paul that they change the rules all the time, and I don't think it's about punishment and reward. It's just, so when they change the rules for the receiver, so, you basically got to catch the ball and you got to hold it all the way through contact and all the way to the ground. Is that punishing a receiver or is that just making it some clarity about what a catch is? I think it's kind of the same thing with the kicker and, changing the rules. And I just got two words for you. I got, Scott Norwood. So, to me, they've changed a lot of rules to make it more difficult to play defense. And, when people talk about the kick that Norwood missed in the Super Bowl, they always just talk about Norwood, but you never hear them talk about the fact that our defense stopped them and pushed them back on the play before that kick. That kick could have been a 30-yard kick, but it wasn't. It was a 47-yard kick. Why? Because our defense held up. So, when you talk about narrowing the uprights a little bit, making the kicking game a little harder, I don't think it devalues kickers. It makes a better kicker even worth more, and maybe it gives a little something back to the defense, because they've taken a heck of a lot away from the defense. So, that defensive stand to keep somebody at 40, 45 yards on the kick, that matters a lot. That used to matter a heck of a lot when guys are making 50, 60-yard kicks. Now, all of a sudden, look where the defense has to keep them to keep from scoring. And, with the overtime rules, where you can make a kick from makes sense. So, I don't think it's about punishment. I think it's about constantly trying to balance this game out. And I kind of go like either keep the rules the same year to year throughout, never change them, or, if we're going to accept that the rules change, then I don't have a problem with narrowing the uprights.
Well, your parallel about the wide receiver, to me, that was more of a clarification change. That wasn't necessarily the balance of power. So, you know, I don't know if that necessarily adds up with the kicking argument, as you were noting there, Mike. I think you brought up a number of fair points in terms of how there's defense and strategy involved, and it's not just necessarily about the efficiency of the kicker. You know, that point was well taken. But using your argument about the wide receiver, the Dez Bryant, the Calvin Johnson rules, that to me was more of clarifying the language as opposed to making it more difficult for the receiver or difficult for the defense.
Okay, bad metaphor. So how about where you can put hands on a receiver, where you can, you know, how close to the line of scrimmage
you
can
hit. Well, that's a better
one. Pick whatever rule change you want.
Well, I think you know where I'm coming from, right? Not to cut you off, I think that's a better one because that goes to what Paul was talking about with making it a little bit more difficult for defensive players outside of that five-yard period away from the line of scrimmage. Now you got to be very careful with what you do with your hands and so forth. So that does make it more challenging for players in the secondary.
I think the only way that anybody could even begin to understand what I'm talking about is if you actually do remember the NFL in the late 60s and the early 70s, and you saw those kickers, and you saw the way the game changed and how it evolved and how these robo-kickers are now getting things done. If you've only been watching football, the NFL, for the last 20 years, I don't think you really understand what I'm talking about. And that's okay, because it's all about opinions on how do you go from here. The kicking game has absolutely changed. The numbers are as clear as can possibly be. You know, trust me, Fred Cox was not kicking a 55-yarder for the Minnesota Vikings in Bloomington for Bud Grant.
Yeah, I think kickers have gotten better. And like I said, I'm kind of a fan of the kicking game, but I could totally see, you know, for me, instead of moving the extra point line, I would probably say, you know, if you're going to do it, then change the whole dynamic of kicking and do narrow the upright. So I'm kind of with you on that one, Paul. So can I jump back to yesterday about the player that I think is going to make the biggest difference for us?
Real quick, who do you got?
I got Weston Richburg, and my reason is because of the importance of the position. And, you know, I think that it's not just about he's a you know, second-year player coming into his own, hopefully. But the communication between quarterback and center is so important. They said that with this new McAdoo offense that the center makes a lot more calls. And people talked about that last year, how Eli was kind of giving away protection calls to the center. You know, I think if you want an example, you know, you could go back to Barrett Robbins for the Raiders. You know, Raiders were having a fantastic season. They were setting scoring records. Their offense was a quick fire, Rich Gannon, quick release offense. And all of a sudden, Barrett had a breakdown, disappeared for the Super Bowl. And, you know, that offense, Tampa Bay's defense was good. But if you look at the way that offense performed, they were so out of sync. It was such a disaster. And I think it just highlights that, you know, your center is more than just alignment and a protection. He's the connection there with the quarterback, and the calls means his position is of just so much importance.
Well, appreciate the phone call, Mike. And we actually brought up Weston Richburg on yesterday's program, where we're talking about some of the key players that have an opportunity to elevate their game and make an impact on the roster. And he's going back to his normal position this season.
And quite honestly, with the complexities of blitz packages and disguised blitzes that you're going to face in the National Football League, the center making those calls better be really on his game.
I think, though, what helps Richburg compared to perhaps other players or other teams that are dealing with new centers is Richburg is going back to a position of comfort.
Yes.
As opposed to taking a guard and moving him to center who's never played that position.
They also played a pro-style offense at Colorado State.
So that, I think, helps the transition even more. And he did get reps last year, too, at center. Limited, but he did get some reps. Let's head back to the phone lines as we move along here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Carlos is in Maryland. Carlos, what's happening?
Hey, what's up?
Doing well, Carlos. What do you have for us?
You said they experimented in the preseason last year with this?
Yeah, they moved the extra points back. Josh Brown for the first three games because, remember, the Giants had that extra preseason game.
Right.
They were in the Hall of Fame game.
Well, what was the percentage? 90 and 96?
It was 133 out of 141, 94% conversions on PATs.
Oh, I think that's going to be way down because, like, they experimented in August.
Well, there is one thing to be said about that. You're right. The experiment was in the optimum of weather conditions. And so, you know, Raul Allegri made the point earlier during our show, if you're joining us late, that there are going to be guys in unfavorable environments, especially in the latter part of the season, that are going to have some difficulties with this.
Yeah, that percentage is probably going to be in the 80s or something, you know.
Well, Carlos, I think you bring up a great point, and thanks so much for weighing in. The fact that once we get to December and November, that's going to impact those numbers very differently than just in a small sample period during the course of August. Let's head back to the phone lines here. Vic is in Florida. Vic, what's happening?
How you doing, Paul and Lance? Let me get this straight, because I'm really a bit confused about this. Now, if the Giants score a touchdown, the extra point will be placed on a 15-yard line, so that becomes like a 32, 33-yard field goal.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes, you're right. Correct.
Well, wouldn't that be, if a team has a so-so kicker, they're better off going for a two-point?
Well, that is the thought right now, is that they're trying to entice teams to potentially go for the two-pointer instead of taking the one-point conversion. Now, the two-point conversion, Vic, last year, teams converted at a 47% rate on the two-point conversion attempt. So what would you like to do? Go for the long PAT kick at 94%, at least in theory, based on last year's experiment, or 47% chance of going for two, or making two?
Well, so you're right. I will go for the extra point, of course. But I personally believe this is unfair to the kickers, and I'm going to stick with that. And, hey, you mentioned something about baseball before in the old days in the 60s, Paul. This is a question for you. You remember that game in 65 that the Giants played, the Philadelphia Phillies? Marichal beat Bunning 1-0 in 17 innings. You remember that game?
I know of it. I was a little too young to remember it, but I know of it.
17 innings, one pitcher, 1-0.
Well, again,
that's all I want to say. Okay, and my breakout player for the year, I told you the other day, is going to be Williams, because the offensive line is going to open up holes for him, and the kid's going to go through those holes like you wouldn't believe. Have
Vic,
a good day.
Vic, hold on. One question. Yeah. Yes or no? Do you remember when Pat Summerall was kicking for the Giants?
Yes, I do.
I thought that you would. Have a great day.
All right, Vic.
Yeah, have
appreciate
a good one, okay? Call. I saw the 1958 championship game, buddy.
Beautiful.
Bye-bye.
Love you, Vic.
Oh, boy. Vic and Paul reminiscing about the old days. That'll be quite a Big Blue Kickoff live edition.
Pat Summerall in the 50s, Don Chandler in the 60s, and then, of course, moving on to the likes of Pete Gogolak. So, good stuff.
See, that's why I don't understand why you threw out earlier in the show that your first season covering the team was 1983. Because let's face it, that's a complete myth. That's a complete myth, Paul. Okay? You may have not physically had the press pass, the media credential. You've been covering this team since the turn of the century.
Since I was in the womb.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
You're already coming up.
I had the transistor radio in my mother's stomach listening to Marty Glickman.
There you go.
Calling the games.
And working on tips about how to fine-tune and fine-tweak your tan at the same time. So, I mean, the ability for you to multitask before you even came into existence.
You know what was really hard? This was really, really difficult. Trying to watch film against her kidney on the inside of her stomach. Very difficult.
Oh, the details that we provide on this program. Let's head back to the lines. Jermaine is in New Jersey. Jermaine, what's happening?
How you doing? How you guys doing?
Doing well, Jermaine. How about you? What do you have for us?
I'm doing great. I got a few talking points for you guys. Maybe you can discuss and the show off with. I got an over and under for you guys. Over 1,100 rushing, what do you say? What do you think our running backs will go over 1,100 yards rushing? And for our quarterback, over 4,000 yards passing, I think that'll be great. And we can both pull that off, 1,100 yards rushing and over 4,000 yards passing. I think that would be great for our team. What do you guys think?
Well, let me just ask you a clarification question here, Jermaine. When you say 1,100 yards, are you talking about every running back combined, or are you talking about one in particular is going to get 1,100?
One in particular. I think that would be great. If we get one running back over 1,100 yards rushing, I think that would be great. And passing, you know, Eli, I think he can throw over 4,000 yards. I think that'll be great for our team. What do you think?
Well, I think the 4,000 yards is certainly doable, especially with what Eli's been able to do in this offense in just 1 year. You would assume that those numbers are going to improve and with more weapons in the mix. In terms of 1,100 for one running back, the reason why I'm a little concerned about reaching that plateau, Paul, is you have three very different talented running backs. I just don't know if one in particular is going to get enough of a workload to perhaps reach those numbers.
Yeah, in fact, I think because of the injury history to Rashad Jennings, it is very hard, despite the fact that he's the most accomplished of the Giants running backs right now on the roster, to suggest that he's going to do that. I mean, he's never done 1,000 yards before in his career. Last year, just so you know, there were nine running backs who ran for at least 1,100 yards.
Right.
I mean, it's somewhat of a challenge. It's not the easiest thing to do. It's also not the hardest thing to do anymore. If Jennings stays healthy, yes, I agree. Because I'm going to tell you one thing. I know for a fact the Giants do want to get more back to that power running game.
Yes,
and they do.
You love the offensive line. I know you love that.
And they do intend. They do intend on becoming more balanced, and they do want to run the ball more. So I think what you're saying would be music to Tom Coughlin's ears. If you could get him to sign up for Rashad Jennings to get him 1,101 yards right now, he would take that. Guaranteed.
Yes. Also, one thing about Tom Coughlin, you know, he breaks the season down in four quarters. What do you think, guys? What quarters do you think is most important for us to win during the season based on our schedule and the teams that we're matching up with? What do you think
is the most important? Go ahead, Lance.
Well, I mean, I'm going to throw out the cliche, but I really don't think you can classify it. I think based on how the Giants have started and ended seasons, I think you need to win the majority of the games in each quarter, given the plus and minus ratio in terms of missing and making the playoffs.
Well, I agree with Lance in concept. However, if you want to go a little deeper into the onion, look at the second quarter. Philadelphia, Dallas, New Orleans, Tampa, four games in the NFC, two of them in the NFC East. That's got to be a quarter they do well in.
And one other thing, my most important player would be Jason Pierre-Paul, JBP, because I believe this is his year to show that he's worth that big contract that we're no doubt we're probably going to give him if he gives us a big year. And I love you guys' work, and I'm going to keep listening to you guys. I appreciate it.
Hi, Jermaine.
Thanks for your interest.
Appreciate the phone call. Going back, I could also mention, if you want to specify, if you're going to put the gun to my head, I would also say the first quarter.
He tried to,
but I wasn't
and
necessarily
And you squirmed
taking.
Away.
Correct. I'd say the first quarter, too, using your logic. And here's the thing. There's a lot of divisional games in the first half of the season, Paul. You have Dallas and Washington in that first quarter,
right. Just
like you referenced in the second quarter when you have Dallas and Philadelphia. So
yeah.
I would say that the two first quarters of the season,
without a doubt,
to real specify what Jermaine was talking about, yes, you need to take care of business.
To expand on his parameters, it's the first half of the season.
Essentially.
Yes.
The first eight games.
Yes, exactly.
To, because you take care of business in the division, you're going to put yourself in a position where you can win the division. And speaking of the numbers that Jermaine was also throwing out, Manning, 4,400 yards in season number one with McAdoo. That's why I felt pretty confident that he can get to at least 4,000 in year two compared to maybe an individual running back at 1,100.
With an emerging Larry Donnell, an emerging Odell Beckham Jr., and really not having much of Victor Cruz.
Absolutely. You have to also take into consideration the weapons around the quarterback. Let's go back to the lines. Derek is in Atlanta. Derek, what's happening?
Afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi.
Good afternoon to you, Derek. What do you have?
Okay, so what I wanted to say is that I thought the NFL was trying to make things safe, you know, emphasize safety. The last thing I need is my franchise left tackle getting blindsided when a defense is trying to take back a two-point play. So I don't like that rule. And
you're talking about the live defensive opportunity during a missed extra point or a shorter blocked extra point where they can now run it back to the other end zone and wind up coming up with a point on defense.
Yeah, I think this should
actually
be
two
dead,
points
dead
on
play.
Defense.
A failed attempt, dead play.
Right.
I mean,
that's the college rule, you know.
Right.
That is the college rule in the NCAA. That's a live play. They're not groundbreaking here. They're stealing something from college.
Yeah, and I thought that they were trying to do, you know, trying to make the rules safe for, you know, I just don't want to see no one getting hurt, a lineman or a kicker getting blindsided on something like that.
I honestly don't know that I've heard of any really bad injuries in college off of a play like that. I don't think it happens so often that it really warrants any type of statistical analysis.
Well, okay. Well, maybe they used to and keep their head on the swivel in college. Maybe, you know, and it's going to take somebody to get hurt maybe for them to keep their head on the swivel in the NFL.
Again, I think they probably should have thought this whole thing through for another experimental preseason before they actually jimmied with the rules. That I think we can all agree on.
I think that they're going to revisit the whole thing next year again.
That's what they said.
I hope they get rid of that. But I was going to say, I think that this rule, I think your guest said that the rule benefits a warm weather team. I think it actually benefits the cold weather teams and the bad weather teams, because the bad weather teams are going to be teams coming in here and try to kick in that Meadowlands wind is going to have a problem. You know, the Josh Brown, no matter where he goes, is always going to be kicking in weather that he's used to, either bad weather or in the sunshine in Florida, you know, if he goes to Miami. So I don't see how it's a disadvantage for the bad weather teams. I think it's an advantage for the bad weather teams.
Well, I threw that out earlier in the program, Derek. I would agree with you. I think Josh Brown is so used to rough conditions that when he goes to Tampa Bay and Miami, for example, he's not going to complain. It's going to be ideal conditions to attempt what is essentially a 32 or a 33-yard field goal. But I think vice versa, if you go with the warm weather kicker, now having to go into situations in November and December who doesn't get that type of weather earlier in the year, it makes it challenging for that type of a kicker.
Yeah. Okay, guys. Well, have a good weekend.
All right, Derek, you too. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. Number of people on Twitter weighing in on this topic as well. Let's get to some tweets here. I know we have hit the lines pretty heavy. Ben Gruen at Gruen Ben says they should make all conversions from the two in the fourth quarter. Here's a new rule to spice things up. Don't like putting the game on kickers for extra points. That's one suggestion. Ben Gruen also had a few more. Let me throw this out here. In terms of some of his other ideas, if the extra point is too automatic, make it officially automatic without a play. Elect to take the point or go for two. That would certainly be a way to make everybody go for a two-point.
Wow.
Conversion. That's a very interesting idea to throw out there.
Wow.
You take the one, you don't even have to kick it, or you go for two. That, I think, would be something to experiment with in the preseason.
That's an interesting twist on this whole thing. I never even thought of that as an option.
Jazzy underscore J-Dog. If the extra point was meant to be a given, then touchdowns would be 7 points. So moving it back should not be an issue. So he's taking the opposite approach of what Ben has thrown out, saying that it shouldn't be automatic because then essentially touchdowns should just be 7 points right there. Let's continue to move along here. In terms of people throwing in their ideas about what to do with the extra point, and this is what makes football so fascinating. We can debate over extra points. We can debate over whether or not a receiver makes a catch.
It's a great game.
It is a great game. I can't necessarily argue with that. Big Dash 07088 at Cole Wiss 88. You just said they shrunk the goalpost at the Pro Bowl, and a Pro Bowler had trouble. You were referring to Adam Vinatieri.
Yeah.
That's a test. So he's saying that should have been enough of an experiment during the Pro Bowl that they don't necessarily have to continue to work out the kinks.
Well, now understand, the Pro Bowl was a one-time deal, and they did two things. They shrunk the width of the uprights, and they forced the PAT to go back to the 15-yard line. They wound up with a double whammy, and Vinatieri must have been like, "Whoa, what are you doing to me?" So I understand him having trouble in that situation. That was probably a bit too dramatic.
One last one here. SNF Mikey at Mikey Angel TV. Making it less automatic will entice teams to go for two. Kicking has become predictable. The change adds an element. So he obviously agrees with what you had been emphasizing during the show.
Well, once again, I go back to the numbers. The preseason sample, again, in great weather in August, 94% under the new rule that they will implement this season. compared to 47%, which is exactly half, converting on the two-point conversion. Is that ratio enough to change those decision-makers' minds to go for the two? I don't know that it's going to make much difference.
Well, I think it really is going to depend on the confidence you have in your kicker. You were throwing out the numbers for where they succeeded within 50 yards.
Again.
And they were pretty impressive last season.
But during the regular season, and this was not an experiment now, this was field goals from 33 yards for the entire 2014 season. Kickers were 93%, which was only 1% off of the August experiment on PATs. So that's why, I'll be honest with you, I don't think that the preseason number is as skewed as maybe we'd like it to be.
In terms of the weather.
Right, because the regular season field goal stat was 93%. So I think the number's solid.
And that was for a whole season,
yeah,
you're saying.
Which included November, December. They're
the
all
bad
in
weather months. For example, as opposed to the caller who called up earlier and said the numbers are bound to go down because the preseason was just based on.
And I kind of agree with him for a minute, but then, you know what, that's a bad a blackout moment on my part, because this number does indicate it's a substantial figure. It's got some teeth to it.
So the debate will certainly continue, and as we mentioned in the show, they are going to revisit this after this season. So this doesn't mean that this rule is going to stay as is moving forward.
You know what, though? If they were going to revisit it after the season, how about just experiment in the preseason again? If you're not 100% sure that this is what you want to do, then fuss with the rules a little bit during the games that don't count, like you did last year, see what the results are, and move along.
Well, I would argue, though, the regular season gives them a bigger sample size. So that's probably why they want it to continue. I know you're going to throw out the field goal numbers. I get that. But I think they want to see it with their rules and regulations in place, with the officials understanding it, the team strategizing, and do it for a whole regular season.
Hey,
that's at least their school of thought.
I think they were just in a hurry to make a move. I really do.
Well, that's why we will see what plays out during the course of this regular season, and then they'll reevaluate, determine whether or not they want to go back to the old school of thought or keep things as is. Certainly appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets, and Raul Alegre for joining us off the top, former Giants kicker, giving his two cents on the change with the extra point. And Josh Brown, by the way, current Giants kicker, he gave his thoughts on Giants.com. There's a great article up on our website, so check that out. He went into detail what he thinks about the new rules that are going to be in place in this coming season. Big Blue Kickoff Live with you each and every weekday. We'll get back to more Giants topics at hand the rest of the week, but obviously we like to cover on this program changes in rules that are going to impact the league as well as the
Giants. It's news.
Absolutely. So that's why we went a little bit off topic, but keep those tweets coming in on Giants topics, and we'll continue to address that moving forward the rest of the week. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday as we stay locked to Giants.com here with Big Blue Kickoff Live. Have a good one.
Well, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go.
Got through the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
What a kick up punt. Broken intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.